Gavrilik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Well, hello and welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. This is Mick Warner and with me is Mark Robinson. This weekend, we're going to have all 10 Victorian clubs playing in some scratch matches. So finally, some footy is back. We've got the Hawks playing the Dogs. Carlton will play Essendon. Geelong will play Collingwood. North will play St Kilda. Melbourne will play Richmond. I don't think I've missed anyone there. Which of those five games, Robbo, would you, if you could tune in or head along to Arden Street or GMHBA, which one would take your fancy there?
Oh, my God. Melbourne-Richmond, to see what Melbourne forward line's going to be. To be honest,
What is it going to be?
Who knows? We'll talk about that in a second. It's really interesting. These scratch matches, yeah, a little bit of interest in them. I'm going to miss them. I've never thought I'd say this, mate, but I'm going to miss the NAB series, you know, because we're doing a lot of writing at the moment. We're not writing about games. We're not writing about the NAB series and who's performing well. We're not seeing anything with our own eyes. And the season's what? March 18, what's it, 20, couple
four
of 23
weeks,
days
four
away?
Weeks.
4 weeks yeah. away. The Open went deep into February. So usually we start our footy coverage on the Monday after the, we ramp up our coverage in the Herald Sun the Monday after the Australian Open. I just feel it's been a really, really slow build up to this season.
It has, but these practice matches will effectively be NAB series games, won't they? I mean, I'm sure the teams will take them as seriously as they do. I don't know whether they'll have extended interchange. Hopefully they will. But the big talking point will be that man on the mark rule, which you seem to be across. You said last week you thought it was 1 metre either side. Are we still confident that's what that rule is?
Well, when people ask a question like that, they generally know the answer.
I have no idea what to expect.
That's what I've read. And now I work at Fox Footy, and I'm probably going to get in trouble here. But are these scratch matches being telecast?
That they're on. You're being encouraged to stream it from home and not attend because of COVID. You'll be able to dissect them. I don't know whether they'll be commentated.
Yeah, now what does that mean? You'll be able to stream them so the clubs are filming. The clubs are filming these games.
Yeah, I believe so. I'll have to check. But then, obviously, the main round of the NAB series is the following weekend. Well, over 2 weekends. That'll be on Fox.
Yeah, that'll get the full coverage. Yeah, as I said, we're starting to ramp up. We've had a lot of off football issues, off field footy issues at the moment. But as you said, we're going to go and see we'll see for the first time the man on the mark rule. A few people have had their opinions. A few players have had their opinions. I interviewed Jordan Lewis last week. His opinion, I really like it. Whatever the AFL is doing to open up this game, I am supportive of. Now, if it doesn't work, and there'll be people howling, Mick. They will be howling over the 50-metre penalties. I'll say it again. No one barracks for the man on the mark. They barrack for the person with the pill. Give them some time and space to move the ball. If it creates more goals and creates just a little thing here, if it creates someone running off and bouncing the ball, mate, I'll be happy, because when I was growing up, I remember one of my first grand finals I watched was the 1977 grand final when Phil Manassa grabbed the ball back with a wing and took about 4 or 5 bounces and kicked the ball. And it was one of the most exhilarating things I'd seen as a young fella on the footy field. High marks and players running with a ball. And high marks are disappearing. And certainly players running with the ball is a facet of our game that has just been swamped with defensive strategies.
No, I agree with all that. We do want the game to open up. It'll be interesting to see what the AFL does with its famous competition committee, which was established 3 years ago. Eddie Maguire was a member of that. Clearly, he won't be on it. Remember they announced it at the time?
Why won't he be on it?
Well, because he's no longer a football official. He better not be on it anyway.
What does that mean?
Well, you have to have a job in football to be on the competition committee, don't you?
Is there any media people on the competition committee?
No, actually, but Andrew Ireland, I think, was on it when he didn't necessarily. He's on the Sydney board, actually, I believe. Yes, but anyway, yeah. the competition committee is the new rules committee. But I get the feeling that these rules actually didn't go through the competition committee.
I have been told that as well by a club official, that the AFL is not listening to the competition committee. I'm sure they are. Gil McLaughlin, the big man, he did an interview on 360 during grand final week last year, and we asked about the rules, and he said, well, he was a bit of a joke, but, you know, some of the best jokes have got a hint of truth in them, Mick. And he said, we'll do what we always do. We will listen to everyone, then we'll make our own decisions.
Yeah.
And got a bit of a giggle, but maybe they've done that. I can't categorically say this didn't go through the competition committee, but a club official told me it didn't.
One issue that, let's get into it, that won't go through the competition committee, it'll go through the executive. But did you see the front page of the Hobart Mercury on the weekend? Picture of Gillon McLaughlin with his hand in the air and the headline, "Hands up if you've killed Tasmanian football." It was a very powerful, very aggressive front page, which sort of shows you that how quickly relations between the Tasmanian government and the AFL have fallen.
Yeah, well, it's a passionate subject, Mick. My thoughts on it is, well, the AFL announcing on Friday that they basically will give an answer in 12 months' time. I'm not confident anymore that the AFL is confident that they can get a team up in Tasmania in the foreseeable future. The delaying tactics, and I can sort of understand it with COVID, and but then you reported last week there was a loss, or the AFL reported it themselves on AFL.com, which they always do these days. They put out their press releases on AFL.com and then send it out to the rest of the media after that. Was it $119 million loss?
No, it was $23 million loss. But look, they're numbers that you can... You know, they spent their $60 million future fund, so you could argue it was an $80 million loss. But, you know...
They said that is an $80 million loss if they spent their future fund.
Well, they'll argue that it wasn't, but either way, they did contain the COVID crisis financially a lot better than certainly Eddie Maguire had suggested of a $500 million loss, et cetera. But...
That's twice you've mentioned Eddie Maguire. Are we going to have a sort of a roundup on Eddie Maguire every podcast this year?
No, but more often than not, last year he was front and centre in all this stuff. So I apologise for bringing. I won't bring him up ever again. But I don't buy the economics debate that it's money that the reason Tasmania can't fund a team. I mean, the Tasmanian government already spends $8 million a year on North Melbourne and Hawthorn sponsorship. So you cancel that out, there's $8 million straight away. The Tasmanian government are going to back this team beyond anything you saw at Greater Western Sydney and the Gold Coast Suns, which, you know, if you want to talk about money pits, we can talk about those. So timing is clearly not appropriate with COVID. But all they wanted was some respect, Tasmania. Tell us what you're thinking. Now, maybe they can't give it, but that front page, I think, is a sort of a reflection of the respect that Tasmania feels that it's getting, rightly or wrongly.
There's a couple of battle fronts here, and one of them's the economics. And as I said, I'm not sure the AFL believes Tasmania can financially, economically and financially support this team. which means if the team does go in, the AFL are going to have to fork out. What did they give to GWS and the Suns? Is it around about $25 million a year?
$27.5 million Gold Coast got before COVID. But Tasmanian team would never be as wanting of money as the Gold Coast Suns. You cannot make that argument. But Gold Coast Suns was a diabolical financial investment, which is maybe turning the corner. But Tassie, it won't be that because the government will back it.
And they've got a state full of football supporters.
Exactly. And stadiums already built. But it really comes down to what you said, that you get the feeling that the AFL just don't want a team in Tasmania.
No. Don't put words in my mouth.
I apologise.
I think that's two apologies in our show too, mate. You don't get that gap as well. I think Gil is a business person first and a footy person second, and I suppose he has to be in that role. Now, Gil, I think, would like a Tasmanian team, and I think the commission would, but I don't think that they believe the numbers stack up. That's all. And if the numbers don't stack up, how much support do they have to give the competition? Anyway, that's the one aspect. That's the business side of it. What's today? Today is Tuesday morning. I got an email over the weekend from a 75-year-old Tasmanian person, a man asking me to send his email to Gil McLachlan. And it was a passionate... It was a passionate reach out to the AFL to understand what has happened to football in Tasmania. Leagues dying, strong clubs dying, either the northwest, I think, or the northeast is just totally just disintegrated. He's saying the AFL has done this. Now, I think that's too harsh. The AFL has done this. I mean, again,
well,
economically.
But they run football in Tasmania, AFL Tasmania. I mean, yeah. The buck stops somewhere, Robbo.
Yeah, but, you know, again, things happen in society to drive people away from small towns and towns, and you can't get numbers
there's no doubt about that.
Et cetera. And that's part of it. But it was just an emotional letter, Mick. And I don't know if you've received any. I've had a couple. Just talking about what football means to Tasmanians. And absolutely, I'm in favour of the team. Alistair Clarkson came out in the weekend and said he's in favour of 20 teams. I like that idea, and I like it a lot because I'd like to see a 20-team, a 20-round season and not a 23-week season.
Where would the 20th team be?
Well, Clarkson suggested Northern Territory. Now... Again, there's a romance about Northern Territory because we've seen all these great players come from the Territory and play AFL. And we think, God, how many are up there? Could we, if we invested millions and millions of men, more than we invest now, could we unearth more unbelievable talent? Now, I think yes. The more pathways that are opened up in football, the more possibilities of young men and our young women, if we're looking at the men's AFL competition, if we could put $1 billion, which is not going to happen, mate, but, you know, if we could put so much money in and find the unearthed talent, I'm sure it's there. But again, is the infrastructure, will the finances be there in Northern Territory to support a 20th team? I'm not sure.
Peter Gordon was pushing for a 20th team in... He wants 19 in Tassie and then another one in Perth, maybe even Adelaide, but probably Perth. Can I ask you this? The AFL, since it became a billion-dollar enterprise, you know, 20, 30 years ago, do you think, take the AFL out of it, the elite competition, do you think that the code or the product of Australian rules football is in better or worse shape at the grassroots level than when we went into this professional era? I'm talking about places like Tassie and Canberra, where footy was actually once the number one sport it's now fallen to fourth. Do you think, you know, the fall of country leagues, that we have neglected Australian rules where it matters most?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Mick. I played in the country. I've seen teams just fold, mate. I've seen teams merge. The country footy is just not what it was. And the standard is not what it was. Now, that's a sweeping comment to say that, because, again, there's so many factors that come into why country footy is falling away. I don't think it'll ever fall away, but it's falling away. But you speak to people in the country involved in football clubs, and they're angry. They're angry. They believe that the AFL has left them behind in their push and journey through to making the elite competition the best. But compare the standards of football. I don't know if you go to many metropolitan games or many country games, and I don't either when the season starts. But I have been to a couple. It's a different brand of football, mate. I mean, country footy.
No congestion for a start.
And my fear about the future of footy is that, you know, coaches come in and they look at the way the AFL's played and they try and teach younger people or senior metropolitan, we've got to play the same way, we've got to play the same way. But I hope that just doesn't happen. I like the fact that footy in the lower grades is played more yesteryear than what the senior footy is.
Yeah. I want to move on to concussion. The news today, the coroner's finding into the shocking case of Danny Frawley, confirming that, you know, what we all suspected, that he'd been struggling with severe depression.
But when you say the coroner's report, what did it explain?
Well, it explained how he was, the emotional toll that he was under in the years and days leading up to his death. The circumstances of the death and the link to CTE, which, as we know, was that his brain had been tested first in the Australian Sports Brain Bank in Sydney, and then it went to Boston to the US Brain Bank, and there was stage two CTE there. And one of the things that the report is saying and urging really is we need to know more about this link between head knocks and mental health. And I know there's still a lot of deniers out there. I've seen some interviews recently of so-called experts saying that there's no link between concussion and long-term mental health. But
give me a name. Said that.
I can't remember the name, but I heard recently a doctor being interviewed by Jared Healy and Sam McClure.
I listened to that, mate, on 3RW, and Peter Jett, who's a strong campaigner on concussion, he was on in an interview, and he just, oh, I think he might have been interviewed the next day, and they replayed some of his words, and Peter Jett gave that concussion expert, he gave him a severe lashing.
There's definitely two schools here. It's like climate change. There's your deniers and there's your believers. And
it's, what do you believe?
Well, it's a very dangerous thing to deny. And as the coroner's report says,
concussion or climate change.
Sorry?
You say it's a very dangerous thing to deny, and I ask you, are you talking about concussion or your personal opinion on climate change?
I think if you're a climate change denier, that you're one of the last of the Mohicans there.
Nice to hear.
I assume that at Warrandyte Way, you're definitely a believer in climate change.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm a definite believer in concussion and mental health.
Absolutely, it's undeniable. Have you watched Aaron Hernandez documentary?
Yeah, I did watch that. I watched that a couple of years ago. Yeah, that was a hell of a documentary, and got great access, and just goes to prove he had CTE, and he ended up going to jail for murder. I think he committed suicide in jail. Circumstances different to Danny Frawley. Absolutely, they're different, but the outcome of taking his own life is similar. So, but when you ask me, you know, we've got to understand, or people, organisations are going to understand the link between concussion and mental health. How do you suppose they go about that? What is the process of making that link?
Well, I think it's that causal link, they say, and it is It is true that the science is out. It's not definitive. Same you could say with climate change, maybe, probably not. And so that's where the investment needs to be. But the one thing that's clear is that you need to rest your head after you get a knock. And the rule change that the AFL brought in for this season, that you'll sit out a minimum of 12 days, is a step in the right direction for that. We have to acknowledge that. So,
That's the outcome. We've got to stop it at the source.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the source is actually playing the game. All right. So we've got to stop concussions on the field. It might be a radical idea.
And then we've got to stop returning them too soon after they're being concussed.
Yeah. Again, that's the outcome. But let's just deal with what's contributing to concussion on the ground. If I was the AFL and I was on the rules committee, and if I was Eddie McGuire still on the competition committee, I would suggest the AFL. In recent years, the AFL, the umpires department, has decided that if a player ducks his head and gets hit in the head, that it's play on. No, you ducked your head. How many times have you heard that? No, you duck, play on. I think the AFL should introduce a rule to say if you duck your head with the pill deliberately, you get a free kick against you.
They sort of started doing that recently, didn't they?
They haven't. They have never, ever introduced a rule that says if you deliberately duck your head, right, to get contact to the face or to the head, play on.
I agree. They stopped giving a free kick for that head high, deliberately getting.
But they've got to give a free kick to the person against, who ducks your head.
Right.
And guess what will happen?
It'll stop.
The coach will tell their players, and the players are not stupid and they're not. They won't duck their head because they won't give away free kicks. And that might just reduce the incidence of, I think Peter just because it's a subliminal concussion.
Sub-concussive hits, yeah. Yeah, that's spot on. Now, I want to move on. I want to ask you about, probably how many years ago did you take over from Mike Sheen? 8, 9 years ago.
Tenth year.
10th year. So 11 years ago when you took the baton from Mike Sheehan, you inherited the top 50, which comes out on Monday. How do you do it? Did you talk to Mike at the time about how you condense 850 plays in down to 51 to 50? And tell us about the process of elimination.
I go through every team, okay, and I pick out the stars, and especially at the start of the season, because the top 50 at the start of the season is about who do you think will be in the top 50 by the end of the year. Okay, now the end of the year top 50 is who the best players were that year. At the start of the year, it's about who you think will be in the top 50 players. So I go through every team list and I look at their stars and I look at their younger players coming through who I think could make a mark on the competition. So I have a look at that. And then I call up the club best and fairest and see what the clubs are. I put a lot of importance on club best and fairest because they know what roles are being played, et cetera, et cetera. So I do that. What I don't do is I don't ring up people and say, who do you think's a better player, you know, Travis Boak or Scott Pendlebury? I don't do that because I believe if the Herald Sun are asking me to do the top 50. It's got to be my opinion. Now, I do have one assistant coach. And when I do my top 50 and it's completed, I send it to a bloke who I respect in footy. And he will say to me, you got him too high, to him too low, et cetera, et cetera. So he's the only person. That's after I picked my top 50. And this year I made one change, one person in, one person out. So that was it. So I finished it this morning, actually. It'll be appearing in Monday's paper. And the beauty of doing the pre-season top 50 is you've got the ability to pick the young players who you think are going to step up. And this year, I've got, you know, four or five, six players in the top 50 who people are going to say, he's not better than him, he's not better than him. But it's not. I'm not picking them on what they've done right now. I'm picking them on what they're going to do over the next 22 rounds. It takes me about 4 days. I write 50 biogs. I look at stats. There's a bit dozen, but a lot of it's gut feel. I mean, this is so much information to take in on players. And at the end, I suppose you're really stumped for your phase. You know, I really do. Like, I'll give you one, okay? I'll give you one player. Can I give you one player?
Yep.
I'll give you two. I'll give you two players. One, because he's in your team. I've got Shai Bolton in the top 50 players. Okay. Now, I had Shai in the top 50 at the end of last year. I reckon he had a ripper final series. And I just think he's going to get better and better. So he absolutely is in the top 50. And another young player I've got in is Bailey Smith from the Western Bulldogs. He comes in at number 49. Bailey Smith's just about to enter his third year. I think he's a super young player.
Yeah.
And I just...
Yeah.
The Dogs are going to go deep this year or deeper. They've got to go deeper. They're going back-to-back elimination finals. Last year, they got knocked out by St Kilda playing a circle work game up at the Gabba. The Dogs are going to go deeper. I think Bailey Smith's really going to stamp himself on the Dogs this year, which in turn will help stamp himself on the competition. So, you know, there's just two examples of young players who I think are going to have pretty solid seasons.
The thing that I'm thinking about Mike's original top 50s, it was Carey and Kuda and these guys. You know,
original number one was?
Oh.
I do. And I just thought his first ever top 50 might have been done at the end of 93 or the start of 93 because Mick arrived at the Herald Sun. I know this because I spoke to him. I arrived August 2. And Mick arrived, I think, January 93. So I'm presuming he did his first top 50 for the Herald Sun. He did bring it from the big paper, or the big Sunday paper. And his original number one was Stephen Kernahan.
Oh, very good. Well,
Kernahan was a gun, mate. He was
with his helicopters. But if you think back, right, Carey and Kuda, I remember he always had them around.
Kernahan with his helicopters.
Yes. They went straight, but they were pretty ungainly kicks. But
Kernahan's got to be remembered, mate.
Oh, I'm joking, mate.
Bah,
I'm joking. He was a superstar. But let me get to my point. Carey and Kuda, right? Have a guess how much money they earned. Right, $1 million. And even now, fast forward 30 years, 20 years. They're still earning $1 million, the top players. It's just ridiculous.
Some of them are earning a bit more than $8 million.
Not really. Not really. Maybe 1.3. You've done 1.25, you know, for your dusties. But it's incredible.
That's a curious discussion because the lesser-known players or the bottom 10 players in teams back in, say, 1990, I think Carey, about 96, 97, was $1 million.
A quarter of the salary cap.
Yeah, and I think Kuda, about 2000, signed a 5-year deal for 5 years. The front page of the Herald Sun. You know why I remember all this, don't you?
You wrote it. Back in the day.
Yeah, he was five times $1 million. They used to have the ACAs back then. I think Kuda and Carey were. I think it was about 400, so they might have been getting
600 salary cap, and they were taking the entire marketing component football fees. But yeah, it's interesting. So what's Dustin Martin on?
1.25, I think.
Cicuta was on
the red Buzz Rothfield's piece. He's going to Sydney.
Of the coaches, Mick, who are your top three coaches you think are under the most pressure this year?
Well, I went to a dinner party on Saturday night and I was talking
What did you eat?
I had a T-bone steak with a seeded mustard, and I was seated with a couple of Melbourne supporters, and the pain in the Melbourne supporters' soul, isn't it? It's just, and so it's got to be Simon Goodwin. And, you know, I said to this guy, there's something special about the Raw at the G, and let's hope we get back to the full G, when the MCC is full and the Demons are in front. That, you know, that kind of sophisticated Raw.
It's not the same.
It's not guttural like the punt road in, but it's...
I speak about the Raw at the MCG, and everyone's been at the MCG and been a part of it. The two biggest Raws I've been a part of or been sort of witness to, it was in 1993 preliminary final when Mark McCurry kicked in the goal for Essendon, 40-odd points down at half-time, and he kicked the goal in the third quarter, and it felt like the roof was erupting. And then about 1990, I don't know, when did Fev leave Carlton? Say it was 2003, 2004, right? I went to the MCG, Essendon playing Carlton, and I think Fev kicked six or seven after half-time, and there's nothing quite a packed MCG full of Carlton supporters going nuts. And that Raw that day was immense. Now, I don't know if Melbourne will have plenty of those Raws this year. I'm a bit worried about...
I am worried about them, yeah.
Well, they went and get Ben Brown. He's got a bung knee. He had a bung knee last year, and now it's just hung around, and now he's out. And Sam Weedy, I got a bit of time for as a player. You know, they were going to be the 1-2. Now they went and got Mad Jack Doyle, who got delisted by the Kangaroos, who are a pretty poor performing team, and looks like they're going to line up with Mad Jack Doyle and in the full forward position. But Melbourne's problem has been their forward line for the last 30 games. And my God, they're starting this year with Mad Jack Doyle and Bailey Fritch. Maybe sit down. Tom McDonald might be returning to the forward line. He probably has to actually. Now they've got these other injuries, but there'll be a close watch on Goody early in the year. There's no doubt about that.
All right, Robbo, that's all we've got time for this week. We'll be back next Tuesday. If you'd like the Herald Sun Footy podcast, subscribe, give it a listen, and we will be back next week.